Hey, this is Golden Tate, and you're listening to the Pride of Detroit podcast.
Detroit podcast, PODcast, prideofdetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter, Pride of Detroit on Facebook, everything you need about the Detroit Lions of the NFL here, right in your ears, the little lounge we have every week we call the PODcast, and we're coming to you very late in the week. We're coming to you late in the week because we finally did it. In a very long span, we have lost bits of sound, we've lost little tiny segments. We've had to re-record parts of First Bite, our preview podcast. The big one finally hit. We finally ate shit. We lost a whole podcast. An entire POD cast down the tube. And not to pontificate too much on it, but I think it was one of our better ones.
And tell them whose fault it is.
I'm not going to say whose fault it was, because this was a team effort, Alex Reno.
It wasn't me, I'll tell you that.
Finally rejoining us, Alex Reno, after like 8 months of hiatus, at Alex_Reno. He's trying to blame this on Ryan Matthews. Black is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan_POD. That wasn't Ryan's fault. His internet did crap out. I didn't notice, and I didn't stop it. It was a team effort. We all failed.
Hey guys, it's the first time I've been here in 8 months. Whose fault was the lost podcast on?
Reunited and hey, it guys, feels so good.
We lost a podcast, but we gained a Reno.
I'd rather have the podcast back.
I'd rather have that old podcast, yeah. We have, however, turned it was a good podcast we lost. We're going to try to do as good of one we did tonight for you. We also took this time to get in our new theme song, courtesy of Brian Shepherd. I am Brian Shepherd, spelled Shepherd, spelling Shepard, both on Twitter and SoundCloud. He recorded a remix of Africa called Victory Monday a while back for Pride of Detroit, and we finally reached out to him, and he was gracious enough to let us use the music. So you just heard that coming in.
Check and out his stuff too. He's got a remix of the Michigan theme song, which I know you guys must be excited about. Check it out on SoundCloud. Good stuff.
Yeah, he's got a lot of good stuff on SoundCloud. You want to check out his SoundCloud, and he's got some good stuff in the works. So shout out to him. All right. Pride to Detroit podcast, round two. Are you guys ready?
Born ready.
Born, let's do it. Okay. So last time we actually had a podcast episode, we talked about some free agency stuff. We are now, what, a couple weeks away from the start of free agency. Let's talk some more about it. Let's talk about some individual guys. We talked about needs for Lions. We talked about guys the Lions might want to retain in free agency, but we didn't really look too far beyond to the sexy picks. And for whatever reason, in the NFL, people don't usually talk about guys they want to pick up that much. Because in general, I don't know, like, people are just generally wary about giving guys money. Fans are, I should say. But I think it's an interesting thing, because last offseason, the Lions did go out and spend quite a bit of money. They got Marvin Jones, probably one of the biggest wide receivers off the free agent market. And we're going to be talking about a few names here. And I think I want to start on Jared Odrick, who was released and could be very interesting for the Lions to look into. So Jeremy, you want to take it away on Jared Odrick, explain who he is, what role, and everything else to Lions fans.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's important to note that we've kind of entered the phase right before free agency where teams are starting to get rid of those cap casualty guys or mm-hmm. guys that just aren't part of the plan. And I think Odrick definitely fits that bill for the Jaguars, who are clearing a lot of space. A lot of people are thinking maybe they're going after a guy like JPP in free agency or you know, who knows at this point. But they're clearing a lot of cap space. Odrick's a guy that makes a lot of sense to the Lions to me. I mean, The Lions can obviously use all the defensive help they need, and Odric's an interesting guy because he's played a lot of positions for the Jaguars. They've kind of switched between a 4-3 and a 3-4 while he's been there, and I think he was at his best as a 4-3 DT and as a pass rusher, so he's kind of that three-tech guy that the Lions really need to play alongside A'shaun Robinson for the future. Because, you know, A'shaun Robinson, Haloti Ngata, kind of similar guys. You're not going to rely on Haloti Ngata for very long. There's even a small chance he gets released this year. I don't think that happens. But I like Odric a lot. I think he makes sense.
You like him despite the fact that he was ranked 91 on Pro Football Focus on defensive ends?
It had something to do with the fact that he was injured in six games because he had problems with, I believe he had an elbow injury.
I think I saw elbow and shoulder maybe.
Okay, yeah,
plus,
sure.
Plus
so
that's not his position that I think he's best at. I think he's best in the inside. And, you know, I think they were 4-3 last year, but a couple years ago they were 3-4. I'm sorry. They were 3-4 last year. I think before that they were 4-3. There was actually a pretty interesting Pro Football Focus article when he first hit free agency because he just signed like a 5-year extension and now they're cutting him loose. But he was a free agent the same year Sue was, and he was coming off a couple really good years as a 4-3 DT, and that's where I think he would be best.
So do you think that he should be full-time 4-3 DT, or do you think they maybe should like put him early downs defensive end? Is he like a pass rusher? Should he maybe pass rushing situations on third down or something?
Definitely. I think that would fit his role best. I mean, it all really depends on what their other moves are, obviously. If they find a DT early in the draft that they like, then maybe he just becomes that third down guy. But, you know, this team doesn't have like any defensive tackles right now. Pretty much any defensive lineman, period. So you get a guy like Odric, he could be a starter, but you keep adding because you're going to need rotational guys. You're going to need starters. Just get as much talent as you can. Odric might be a little expensive, but you know, like you said, he isn't coming off a great year. So there's a chance that the Lions could get him on the cheap.
Yeah. And he does kind of have a like prototypical size for like a three technique as well. He's 6'5", 301 pounds. So he's kind of skinny enough, athletic enough to beat slower guards. So that might help us as well.
Well, it's interesting you mention kind of depth because that's the next position I wanted to talk about. Obviously, the Lions are pretty well set 1-2 for wide receivers. And depending on what happens with Anquan Boldin, who I mean, he's given us no hints on what's going to happen with him. I know he's down this week in Atlanta helping out with Keith Ellison's little, run for Democratic National Committee chair. But I firmly expect him to be back playing football. Probably with the Lions, but just in case, or even if, you know, you want to go a different direction or whatever for the Lions, there are some interesting options out there, and we're going to talk about two of them right now. Ryan, I know you've been wanting to get in here because you wrote the article today, which is Wednesday, about Kendall Wright, and that's one of the names we're going to talk about. We're also going to talk about Victor Cruz, but let's start with Kendall Wright. Like, why do you think, like, I mean, obviously, 1-2, the Lions are set, but beyond that, like, there's a couple of young, there's like Jace Billingsley as a young guy that you may or may not want to keep on the full-time roster, but then there's nothing else if you don't have Anquan.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, like you said, I mean, a lot of it is contingent upon whether or not Anquan decides his body is going to be football ready for another season. I don't think that if he comes back to football that he's probably going to play for any other team than the Lions. And I think the Lions would be kind of silly to let him go or to let him walk and let him play somewhere else if he thinks his own body is ready. I mean, I think we heard enough from different players last year about how well Anquan Boldin takes care of his body, kind of treats it like the temple that it is. Like,
and to the point that he would stay with the Lions, too. He seemed to really gel with Matthew Stafford, and he seems to really like playing for Jim Caldwell. Both those are kind of very big pluses in the book for Anquan Boldin.
Yeah, I mean, he was without a doubt, I think, the most effective receiver that the Lions had in the red zone. He led them in targets. He led them in touchdowns. He was really the most sure-handed receiver that they had the entire season. He was real critical on third downs, extending drives. So Anquan is really, you know, he was very critical and very vital to the Lions' success on offense in 2016. So things are kind of up in the air based on whether or not he decides to come back. And if he doesn't come back, I think there are quite a few, like, very interesting options that would fill that slot position receiver role. And one of them being Kendall Wright. You know, I wrote the thing today on Kendall Wright, the free agent profile on him, just because I thought when Bill Barnwell from ESPN brought up his name, I thought he made a very interesting point that I hadn't really thought of. And that's how Kendall Wright just completely fell out of favor of the Titans system, because there were some guys that were ahead of him. Tajay Sharp and Rishard Matthews, those two guys fit like a more prototypical, like, outside the hash marks receivers, on the outside. And they ran like a league low, I think it was 422 times, with, or 422 snaps with a three wide receiver formations. And the Lions actually ran, I think it was somewhere up in the 700s, and they were the fourth, they ran the fourth most three wide receiver sets of any team in football. So clearly that slot position receiver role is a need. Now, if Bolden doesn't come back, I guess I'll pass this off to you guys before we get more into Kendall Wright. But do you guys think that if Bolden doesn't come back, do you think it's as simple as just passing those snaps off and those opportunities off to, say, Eric Ebron?
I mean, you would hope that Ebron becomes that kind of role, because that's what we expected him. We expected him to be more like Anquan Bolden was last year. When it came to Eric Ebron, we expected him to be the one who was kind of the effective, you know, convert third downs, tight end, get touchdowns in the red zones, and he just, you know, be it injury or whatever else, he really wasn't that guy. Anquan Bolden ended up being that. So if you did bring in someone like it, like, I imagine you would try to pass over some of the responsibility to Ebron, but you'd also want someone else. And it's obvious the Lions very, right now, the offense, as it was in 2016, was very reliant on a slot receiver. I am curious if that changes depending on who you get, if it's a Kendall Wright or a Victor Cruz or whoever else to try to replace Anquan Bolden, if you are in a scenario where you have to replace a Terminator.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting point with Ebron, because if you do that, then someone has to come in and replace Ebron's snap. You know, he had 700 plus snaps himself, and that was missing a couple games. So if you do something like that, you know, essentially make him a Jimmy Graham type receiver, then tight end becomes an even bigger need than it is right now. Unless the Lions plan on, I don't know, using a fullback for once and kind of go a little more I formation or something like that. But
I think they would use a two tight end set before more fullback stuff.
Yes, of course.
Looking at it. And they, yeah, you're right. They would need a blocking tight end to line up opposite of Ebron then. Yeah.
I mean, they would really need not just a blocking tight end at that point. They would need a dual threat. If they're yeah, using Ebron as a wide, like a strict wide receiver, they need a well-rounded guy, and they'd probably have to, you know, get one pretty early in the draft. And I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, but I think if Bolden doesn't come back, like, I don't, grabbing OJ Howard and sliding Ebron to wide receiver is a way to fix that problem. It really is.
Can I just ask then, like, of the roster right now, could you make the argument that Anquan Bolden is probably the most key free agent decision the Lions have to make right now?
It's weird, though. It's a weird situation because it's not as if it's Riley Reiff. Like, it's not...
Yeah, it's not life or death, sure. Yeah.
Right. It's a decision that kind of solely rests on Anquan Bolden. And whether or not he decides to come back, because it seems like if he does come back to football, it's going to be for the Lions, even though he's a free agent. Whereas Riley Reiff, I mean, it's up to whoever can, you know, slap together the best pitch and, you know, the most money to get him on their team. So it's a very unique, you know, set of circumstances. But I think that, I mean, there's something to that. I think the stat that stood out the most was that stat I mentioned that Barnwell brought up. And if the Lions really use that three wide receiver set as much as they do, and I'm sure they're going to next year, getting a third receiving option, whether that end up being Ebron or whether they go out and get another guy, I think that's really important to the team's success. Because like you said earlier, Chris, beyond Bolden, you have Andre Roberts, who is a unrestricted free agent. You don't know if you want to bring him back. I'm not really sure if he's
special,
a...
He, at best, special teams, too.
Sure. And even, like, a fourth wide receiver. So I don't think that you'd want to fill him in full-time at the slot. You have TJ Jones, who's an exclusive rights free agent. We've kind of seen what TJ Jones is made out of. He's going to be a camp body next year. And then you have Jared Aberderis, who the Lions signed as a flyer. I'm not sure if he'll be anything beyond a camp body. And then you have, of course, the guy that we all love in Jace Billingsley. Now, as much as I love Jace Billingsley, and I think he'll end up being the starting quarterback of this team someday, you can't really rely on a whole lot of no experience just going into the season. I think he definitely needs another season where he gets some seasoning, first of all, and also some actives, a spot on the active roster on game day.
Right, yeah, that, like... Never forget, they kept bringing up Jace Billingsley, and he was a healthy scratch for a lot of those games, too. They're clearly not ready to even have him in a depth role right now. We all knew that. He was a project coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a little wrench to throw in these plans, because I don't think the Lions are prepared to hear from Anquan Boldin for a while, right? I mean, free agency starts in 2 weeks. Do you expect a decision by Boldin by then?
See...
Because last year they signed him in July.
Right. Yeah. I don't want to say that he's holding the team hostage, because that's not, I mean, it's really his decision whether or not he wants to come back and play football. Yeah. And I don't think that's his MO at all. So,
but, I mean, you don't get any sign that he's going to make a decision soon, right? I mean, he's off doing his own political stuff, which he's more than welcome to do. I'm not mad
who
at
knows?
Him at all.
Who knows,
but,
though? Who knows? Maybe he already has made up his mind. Who knows? That's the thing. We've heard no, like, there has been no sign out of the Boldin camp, for lack of a better term. Like, this isn't like a Calvin Johnson situation where you're getting, like, you know, is he or is he not, or any of that kind of stuff. Like, he's given no sign that this is, like, I mean, we've kind of said it just because of his age, but no one's really said one way or another if this is a big decision weighing on him.
So, Alex, I want to ask you if you're kind of in, I guess, like, wide receiver three purgatory where the Lions are right now, do you go out and get another wide receiver, or do you prioritize getting a tight end in the draft and you kind of go with the idea that Eric Ebron will be your pseudo wide receiver and you can maybe draft another guy to be wide receiver to maybe groom for the future, or do you go in with Jace Billingsley? I mean, what do you think about it?
Are we still including Anquan Boldin in these plans? Or?
Well, I mean...
You don't know.
I mean, maybe you get Boldin back, maybe you don't. But I think that's kind of the assumption that I think a lot of us have to operate under right now is that, I mean, we didn't sign... Or the Lions didn't sign him until July, so I don't know if you're going to get an answer from him in the next 2 weeks. So, like, what is your what's your contingency plan?
I mean, somebody already mentioned it with Ebron. I don't really think that... Adding Ebron as a wide receiver is a very good idea, because then you're basically adding two tight ends. That's a pretty terrible idea. What it's going to come down to is obviously we're just going to have to draft Zay Jones, and that's it.
All right. Well, I mean, let me just throw out one more name here. I did want to talk about another position, but we're going to talk about it next segment here. Let's talk about, I know the Giants released Victor Cruz. And, I mean, obviously banged up, whatever, old, whatever. But, like, is that someone, since you're considering, like, a backup role or a depth role or something, is that someone you look at, or is that a pass?
I mean, cheap deal, right price, maybe. But, I mean, if he's actually looking for money, because he kind of seems like he's really into himself. I mean, maybe that's just me. But I think that's a hard pass for me. I don't think he is nearly as good as he used to be. And he was, like, second or third option under Eli and did pretty badly last year, so...
Yeah, I mean, coming from a patellar tendon injury and the hamstring stuff that he... Or the calf stuff that he's had, I just don't see him as a viable option. I mean, one other name that we could throw out real quick is DeSean Jackson, too. I mean... Let us know what you think, Jeremy, on Victor Cruz and even someone like DeSean Jackson. Because I think they kind of fit the same mold, because they're definitely slot receivers. But one of them has been relatively more healthy than the other. So
I actually feel the same on both of them. And it's that I think they both still have something left and could potentially, you know, be like a 600-yard kind of guy, which is basically what you want out of your third receiver. But I think the price tag is going to be too high on both those guys, and this isn't a position the Lions need to be spending a ton of money on, I don't think.
They just did.
Because they have, they spent a lot last year. They should wait in the wings for Bolden and see if he comes back, throw him $3-4 million if he wants to come back. Just kind of, throw a contingency plan in there, but don't spend a lot of money on it, and just kind of wait it out, because yeah, the Lions used a three wide set a lot, but they can get along if they don't have to.
I think Deshaun is probably going to ask for even more money than Cruz. Yeah. He's got a lot more left in the tank too. I'm actually somebody that actually would go to bat for Deshaun Jackson, because I really think that we need like a game changing wide receiver, somebody that can get behind the defense and catch a touchdown pass, you know? So I really like Deshaun Jackson still. I don't think he is declining like our buddy Mike Payton said in his article. I still think he's got something left in the tank, so I would go after Deshaun Jackson for the right price, for sure.
All right, let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk some more free agency stuff. I want to pose a big question. Kind of had it in our mailbag from earlier this week, but I think it's interesting enough that we kind of talk about it amongst ourselves. And wouldn't you look at it, we got some talk to do with the backup quarterback. Also on the show, we are finally doing our linebacker rundown, 2016 and onward. So stick around. More free agency talk coming up. Continuing along here on the Pride of Detroit podcast, before we jump into anything else, I think, you know, we were talking off air during that break there, like, Ryan, you really like this question about, like, what do you do at wide receiver? Because low-key, I think that's probably one of the more interesting points for this free agency period and draft is that, yeah, like, there needs to be some sort of depth.
Totally, and It's interesting because there are so many possible outcomes. I think we already brought up the fact that if Bolden isn't part of your answer next year, do you split out Ebron? He becomes that slot possession type receiver, and you grab another more traditional inline tight end who is the dual threat, or do you possibly go get a guy to play on the outside and you move Tate into the slot where it seems like he may be more comfortable? Or,
and
go ahead.
And if you do that, that kind of changes your plans for Eric Ebron in the future too. Like, cause that kind of means that Eric Ebron at that point is now more critical than he's ever been to your offense because you're giving him an increased workload like that.
Yeah.
Here's a question.
Sure.
Do we know any tight ends out there that we want to look at?
Or free agency?
Yeah.
No, I don't want to sign a tight end in free agency. I would rather. It seems like there's a plethora of very good tight end prospects that will be available from, I would say, I don't know, the end of day two through the end of the draft.
Sure, but there's like rarely ever a plethora of tight end prospects that can block, though, is the problem.
Well, yeah. I mean, we've talked a lot about Michael Roberts from Toledo. I think he's big enough he could probably block.
That's like the quintessential guy that you want for the Lions. And then after that, I don't really know, maybe Josiah Price undrafted or something. Like, there's really not many guys out there.
Martellus Bennett's a free agent. I don't think Lions could attract him away. No. Jordan Cameron, I know, is...
Jordan Cameron is a concussion away from probably not being able to eat food on his own.
That's true.
I think you do kind of want a veteran guy back there, like a Tim Wright. The Lions could bring back Tim Wright. That's an option. It's not a great option. But like, what about like Jared Cook?
Here's one. Deion Sims, pride of Michigan State. Decent blocker, 26 years old.
Vernon Davis is also on the free agent market, I believe.
Deion Sims, he used to play for Michigan State when they were good, right?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, I'm all on board for that.
Are you old enough to remember that?
I was very young. Bright eyes.
See, here I was trying to like roll over like the hating on Michigan State stuff and right back into it.
Tim Wright?
Yeah,
free
no,
agent?
Like this is like I think Ryan, I think we were onto something here. It's like depending on what happens to Anquan Bolden, like a bunch of dominoes fall. unlike the entire interior of this Lions offense. You have your wideouts, but then like you have your wideouts, and then I think we're going to talk a little bit about running backs because, you know, still work in progress there, but then the inside for the offense is like, what do you do?
Yeah, and I think there's credence to what Alex said too. I mean, like, am I crazy about DeSean Jackson? Not necessarily, because I think it'll take a lot of money to get him here. Like, you're talking maybe like almost like $8 million a year type money. Like, you're giving out like another Marvin Jones contract.
No.
And I am not big on that, but the idea is if the Lions are going to go out and get another wide receiver, what role do you want him to fill? I talked about, well, maybe if you get an outside guy, you move Tate into the slot, or are you looking for a guy who is a possession receiver who will make the catch and extend the drive, or specifically a red zone target? Or do you want a guy like DeSean Jackson who's going to stretch the field? Because it seems like the Lions don't really have that guy on their team. Like, Marvin Jones kind of showed that he was that guy, and then over the course of the season, maybe because of injuries or whatnot, he just proved to not be that player. It's very interesting. I'm very intrigued by this kind of like subplot going into the offseason about where the Lions' identity will lie, because I think their offensive scheme kind of proved to us that they are the quick hitting offense that wants to get the ball out of Stafford's hand, and they want guys to catch the ball and make plays. And that's why I think Kendall Wright would be such a good fit for Detroit, especially for their scheme after you know, watching some Kendall Wright tape and I mean, he was a former first round pick.
Yeah.
I think we might be doing like we might be assuming a little too much that this offense next year is going to be the exact same as last year, because I do think this team already has quite a few weapons, both in the passing game and a little bit in the running game. So I just think with the healthy Amir Abdullah, Theo Riddick back, Ebron, Tate,
Theo Riddick will be huge to have back.
Yeah.
Like, it cannot be understated how much the Lions
Abdullah,
lost.
Abdullah, man, that's number one for me.
Yeah, and Abdullah, too.
But I think last year the loss of Theo Riddick really hurt down the stretch. But my point is just this team has enough weapons right now that it can adjust. It doesn't have to go three wide 70% of the time. It probably still will. But if they have two healthy backs in Theo Riddick and Amir Abdullah, that opens up a lot of different possibilities. Yeah. And I would really love to see some two receivers threats. Then you can take one of those wide receivers off the field, because you didn't see the Lions run a lot of two running back sets last year.
Well, I'm mostly just worried. For me, I'm mostly just worried as far as, like, again, depth, because what happens if Golden Tate or Jace. Marvin Jones goes down?
Jace.
Yeah, you can say Jace right now, but we'll see. All right. I wanted to pose this question. We had this in our mailbag from Monday, and it was big enough we ended up making a segment on it on the original cut that was lost. Do the Lions, and it kind of ties in a little bit here when we're talking about DeSean Jackson and what you guys are talking about there, about you would have to probably pitch out DeSean Jackson about $8 million. Are there free agents out there you want? Like, is this free agent class out there? Have anyone in it you can say for certain you want to see the Lions break the bank on that individual?
I hate breaking the bank for anyone, honestly. I think the great deals come when we sign a guy like Golden Tate for a valuable contract. Glover Quinn has contributed on a pretty good contract that we gave him. Unless Le'Veon Bell's out there for the taking, which is not possible, like, there's really nobody that I would break the bank for. Maybe A.J. Bouye, but then again, there's so many cornerbacks in the draft class that we could take and not pay that much money for. Kawhan Short, no, thank you. I wouldn't do that.
If the Lions were to break the bank on a player, I'd want him to be on the defensive side of the ball, but I think I fall in line with Alex that, for one, I don't think that there's anybody worth, quote unquote, you know, breaking the bank on. And, you know, two, it doesn't tend to lead to a whole lot of success. I think the Giants last year were more of an outlier, or kind of like a blip on the radar, more than they are obviously the trend. I mean, look at what Jacksonville did when they spent a ton of money in free agency last year.
Well, I mean, like, what if you were faced with a situation like if the Lions were faced with a situation like, say, Jason Pierre-Paul on the radar? which is obviously, like, defensive ends right now, a huge need for the Lions, but obviously getting JPP would come at a pretty steep cost.
Yeah, I'm not fully behind the Jason Pierre-Paul train. I've been thumping for an edge rusher all offseason already, and, you know, I wouldn't be completely against something like that, but I do think he comes a little pricey. I think, you know, in general, linebackers don't get that big of deals. So if there is a top free agent that I would go after, you know, top tier, top one or two at the position, it'd probably be Dont'a Hightower.
Because I think he's going to get paid, though.
Yeah.
I know linebackers don't get paid, but he's going to get paid.
My Browns got an awful lot of cap space.
I mean, if there's one guy I would get into a bidding war, it's probably him, because we saw what this team was without a guy who could cover a tight end. And Dont'a Hightower has the second highest PFF grade in pass coverage skills, I think. Actually, the highest of all the free agent linebackers, I believe. So, I mean,
that's
something that would change the entire dynamic of that defense.
You think we could call JPP and offer him 70% of what he's asking for?
Maybe, but I just can't really put my finger on as to why.
Yikes.
Low-hanging fruit.
All right, last note I have
with your
here.
Stubby hands.
Last note I have here, then, since we all seem to be united about this free agency class. And I mean, obviously, when we're talking edge rushers, Jared Odrick would be in there. We kind of started the show talking about him. But last note I have here on the roster before we get to our linebacker breakdown. Dan Orlovsky, I kind of doubted it would happen, but it did happen. It seems like the Lions, for whatever reason, Lions have basically informed Dan Orlovsky that they're going to part ways with him. And, yeah, that's it. Your beautiful 2008 quarterback, no longer here. Sounds like he will be, I don't know what his future will be. He might be up in, at UConn.
Coaching?
Yeah, he may be following Randy Edsall up to UConn for that job, because, I mean, we all keep talking about his football brain. You got to put that brain to use at some point.
Yep, but the Lions have come out publicly and said that Jake Rudock is their backup quarterback, which I don't want to hear about that. I don't want to think about it, but
you're going to have to hear
about
it.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
it's
we're
coming.
Hear about
it's coming.
I think we're still going. I think we will draft a quarterback for sure. Count on
you
it.
You really think so? I mean, you.
Yes.
Why would the Lions have three quarterbacks and two of them be rookies or sophomores, you know?
I think they'll go out and maybe get like a free agent backup or something just to kind of compete in camp, but
I think they will either go the way of UDFA or they're going to draft one in the 6th or 7th round. I don't know, like, I haven't looked at the veteran quarterbacks out there, but
I think last year is pretty telling. I think even the year before that, the Lions kept two quarterbacks on the roster.
Sure.
And you can't put Jake Rudock on the practice squad because it's clear that there's somewhat of a market for him. Bears. I guess I'm kind of leaning more towards Jeremy's side.
But who's going to fill the practice squad then?
That's
and then
what
that guy's
I
just going to end up
I don't
getting
know which
cut.
Side I'm leaning. That's what that I don't know. I just don't want Jake Rudock to be the backup quarterback.
You know what will happen. You know what's going to happen on 97.1.
No. That station does not exist anymore. Turn that off your radio stations. It's
I want to
terrible.
Say
that's
no
why
more.
We're here.
It's gobbledygook. I agree with Alex because.
Sorry, guys. You guys are just going to have to live with it, man. Jake Rudock's going to be the backup quarterback, and who cares if the practice squad doesn't have a backup quarterback? Why is that important?
No,
you got to have
a
quarterback on your practice squad.
No, you don't.
Yeah, you do.
No, you don't.
Hold on. Let me be the mediator between you guys real quick.
Okay.
This is the thing, is that I don't think you're going to bring in a free agent quarterback, because then that leaves Rudock as the odd man out, and why did you spend so why did you use the resources on keeping him from coming to Chicago, or, you know, for splitting for another team?
You're just gonna spend a minimum salary on some free agent to compete to take reps in training camp, and then you're gonna let him go.
And then you're just going to have him on speed dial throughout the season or something?
Sure. Kellen Moore.
Is that going to be Matt McGloin?
Yeah.
Guys, Landry McGloin. Jones.
Ricky Stanzi.
Mark Sanchez.
Oh,
if
no.
I do say so myself.
Christian Ponder.
Drew Stanton, baby.
Lincoln Tomlinson better watch his ass literally because Mark Sanchez is running into it.
Toledo boy, Bruce Gradkowski.
Well, yeah, I mean, any of these names is fine, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I just think I think that Alex has, I don't know, I think he's onto something. I mean, I think Bob Quinn might just get an undrafted free agent. If you want another guy in there to just kind of be there, I mean, why not just get an undrafted free agent?
You have, what, 10 practice squad spots now? They're going to have a quarterback on there. I guarantee it.
It would fit Bob Quinn's MO. He has talked about trying to get quarterbacks take flyers on quarterbacks fairly often.
He said once every 2 years on average, and, you know, he could certainly do it this year. It just seems like a weird waste of draft capital. Like,
except when he beats Jake Rudock and wins
that's
the backup quarterback
that's
job.
That's why it's an undrafted. That's why you get an undrafted or something. Yeah, I don't know.
No one's beating out Rudock for the backup job, Alex. I'm sorry.
We're going to get a more talented quarterback. I guarantee it.
How about we grab the only guy that I think you hate more than Jake Rudock, and that was whoever Michigan State's quarterback was last year.
Oh, God. That, Connor O'Connor or whatever, Tyler O'Connor. Yeah.
Something is getting lost in the shuffle here, guys, and it needs to be brought to everybody's attention. Matthew Stafford is your starter. Jake Rudock is your backup. If you don't have a third quarterback,
I know.
Who's your Antoine Randall-El? Like, who's your Julian Edelman? Like, who is your break in case of emergency quarterback?
Golden. So this is where we get to talk about Jace Billingsley?
Yes! And his eventual ascension to QB number one spot.
All right, let's just rest it there because I will lose my mind if we have to talk about more Jake Rudock. Let's move on. We've got our big review coming up on the linebackers. The GOAT, and I am not putting that in capital letters, of the team last year when it came to all the problems and woes on defense. We're talking about it next. All right, continuing along here on the Pride of Detroit podcast, part 3 going on. We're going to move away from free agency talk now. Continue our positional rundown that we've been doing so far all off season, kind of reviewing how certain units and players performed in 2016, whether or not we think key free agents will be back with the team, and what you guys see of the future of that unit, either in scheme or personnel moving forward, and we finally reached it. It's time for the linebackers. This most hated of units in 2016. And I mean, kind of hard to really get around it here. This was very heavy with the injuries. You lost your big star in DeAndre Levy after week one for nearly the whole season again. And I mean, This was the weak point on the Lions defense. They got beat here more than anywhere else on the field.
I don't think there's a position on this team that I had higher expectations for and, you know, was not even close to being met, because the narrative going into 2016 was, all right, we finally got rid of Steven Tulloch. It's finally time for Tahir Whitehead to take over the middle. DeAndre Levy's going to be back. We got all this depth, too. We got John Bostic. We got Josh Bynes. We're good. We're set. And then before the season even starts, like, disaster hits. Josh Bynes is done for the season, it looks like. John Bostic gets hurt in the joint practices. And then DeAndre Levy gets hurt right at the beginning of the season, and suddenly
Rookie Antoine Williams is gone within, like, the first couple of weeks, too. Yeah.
Well, no, he lasted a while, but...
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, sorry.
Well, he did get injured, and he came back.
Oh, right. Yeah. But what... I mean, regardless, like, disaster struck this position, and even towards the end of the season, when they were back with Whitehead, with Levy, with Josh Bynes, they didn't play well. And, I mean, it was the bane of this defense's existence, and it's why the defense was so absolutely horrible in 2016, is just poor linebacker play. Every facet of the game, too. Like, we tended to focus most of the season on their inability to cover tight ends, but they weren't any better, you know, getting any sort of tackles for loss, you know, rushing through any sort of lanes and being any sort of help in the running game. Like, run defense was just as bad as their pass coverage, and lines need to do something about it this offseason.
Yeah, that, and we just have way too many slow linebackers. Like, other teams will just throw to some guy over across the field, and then nobody can catch up to him when he gets to the sideline. Like, the only fast linebacker we have is Tahir Whitehead, and like Jeremy said, that he expected the most out of the line, or he expected the linebackers to do good, and they disappointed him. Like, that's how I felt about Tahir Whitehead, the player. Like, I really expected him to come in and have a big year, and then all of a sudden, he's one of, like, Pro Football Focus's worst linebackers. I think it was second worst grade. Even he was shocked by it, but people look at his tackles and that he was, I don't know, like, top five, top 10 tackle leader or something in the NFL, but he missed so many tackles, and he's not very instinctive in coverage, and I just thought he had a terrible year.
Well, and that's why tackles are such a misleading stat, but I think what you bring up is the most important thing, Alex, is that his instincts in coverage are just so awful. Like, right. And do we think that those things are... Do we think that those things can be corrected, or do you think that that is just something that will plague Tahir Whitehead as a linebacker going forward? Because, I mean, by all accounts, like, I don't want to rag on the guy too much, because I think he's been kicked enough. Like, you know, but PFF brought up that he was targeted in coverage 87 times, which was the second most among linebackers, and he allowed 72 receptions. 87 targets, 72 receptions.
82.7 completion percentage of the...
When we drafted him, that's kind of who he was, so I think that's maybe something we'll just have to deal with as long as we keep him. And he was very raw, very athletic coming out of college, so I thought maybe he could be a good coverage linebacker in man coverage. Maybe he could stick with receivers or whatever, but he's just not very quick to react, not very cognizant of the routes breaking in front of him, not able to, like, dig his foot in the dirt and just charge right at the guy about to catch the ball. And it's just, you saw a lot of that last year.
Is there any optimism left from the year that he replaced Tulloch after Tulloch was injured? Or did we overhype him then? Or has he lost that faith because of last year? What do you make of that season, guys?
I think it has something to do with the level of expectations we were at, because when he replaced Tulloch, I think that we were just hoping for some replacement level play, and I think we're all a little bit surprised at how much better he was than that. Now, once he was handed the reins to be the full time starting middle linebacker, our expectations changed, because what we had seen before, and then with this full workload, things just didn't come to fruition. I don't think he quite lived up to the billing. So, Alex, I mean, do you agree with that? And, I mean, going forward, do you think that he's better off served as a backup?
I think that's a really good point. And then to that point, I think it also has to do with the fact that the defensive line was so good that year when he filled in for Tulloch, and that really, like, bailed the linebackers out, really made them look a lot better. And that, obviously, our defensive line was almost as bad as our linebackers were, and everybody was getting exposed. But yeah, and to answer your question at the end there, I think he should be on a team that has a good amount of linebackers, or a good amount of talent of linebackers. I think he should be a backup.
And I guess, like, I meant backup in terms of, like, a situational role.
Would he be a fit to move on the outside, like, get someone else quarterbacking the defense?
It's hard to say, like, can we really say what he's good at? Like, what is he good at? I don't want to be that mean, but I thought he was, like, primarily a run defender, and he didn't even look good in that area last year.
Yeah, he had a lot of trouble, I think, recognizing where alleyways were opening up for running backs. He didn't do the best job of plugging holes, but I guess what you can count on him to do is, he is a pretty, like, I would say for the most part, he's kind of a sure tackler. Like, it seems like when... I would say more often than not, he brings the guy down. But, I mean, it's hard to make a case for him when he had such a bad season. And there were, you know, clearly broken tackles that happened. So I can't really say what he's very good at.
So obviously, this unit's going to get overhauled through free agency or through the draft. It's no question about that. But is that the starting point? Is it Mike linebackers where you start? Or are there other places you would probably prioritize first when it comes to this unit?
I think it's a matter of just getting a linebacker and
anything,
absolutely.
anything, because I feel like there are a lot of pieces here that can be moved around and not even just moving positional, like, you know, moving a middle linebacker to a weak side linebacker or a Sam linebacker. Like, I don't think it's that, but I think that you have opportunities for players to just fill situational roles. So I think it's just a matter of getting a playmaker and getting talent.
I mean, didn't we have Antoine Williams playing Mike at one point? He was playing middle.
I don't really expect him to, like, take over that position anytime soon.
No, he's defense.
But we've also seen DeAndre Levy kind of call the shots for a while. So I think you could, if you don't draft a Mike like Foster or Davis in the draft, then you could get somebody like Hassan Reddick, who would be a Will linebacker, Zach Cunningham. And then maybe you could move over DeAndre Levy, because I think he's capable of doing that. I mean, like Ryan said, I think you just have to get the best linebacker that you can and just add talent there, because we do not have much talent.
Yeah, and we also just can't trust any linebacker right now. Like, we want to all hope that DeAndre Levy's going to come back and be at least a fraction of what he was in 2014. But, you know, reality is starting to set in. The Lions can't rely on that either, so I completely agree. Just grab a great linebacker however you can, stick him in there, and then, you know, deal with shuffling when training camp comes. You just want talent right now on defense overall, but especially a linebacker right now.
I hate to drudge up old things, but let's just talk about DeAndre Levy real quick.
Yeah, no, that's a good jumping off point, because I wanted to get into individual guys. We talked a lot of Tahir Whitehead, but let's start on Levy. What do you have?
Okay, so like I said, I don't mean to drudge up the DeAndre Levy talk, and I think this might be the inverse of the Tahir Whitehead situation, where clearly the expectations were so high for DeAndre Levy that coming back from the injury and dealing with all of the rehab and eventually getting back on the field, expectations were still very high for him, and kind of unfairly high, I think, for anybody who was dedicating so much time to just getting back to full strength rather than, you know, getting to, like, peak performance level. So going forward, do you guys see DeAndre Levy being a major contributor to this team? You know,
listen, I think I just want to speak for Pride of Detroit for a second, just on, like, a bit of defense, because I know this becomes a touchy subject, and especially with you, Jeremy, every time we bring up DeAndre Levy. And I think it's editorial policy. We have defended him when it comes to people who say that his mind isn't in football, that he has taken up all these, like, you know, social causes, be it, you know, getting rape kits tested, or he's going to Chile or whatever. All these things that make people say, doubt his commitment to the game or doubt that he's trying to get back. We think that's dumb. We believe very clearly that Levy loves football, but I think that is something we are all a little more divided on, is the question of, this is the legitimate question on Levy. The question of, like, you know, does he want to keep playing football? That's an illegitimate question. That's a dumb question. How good can he be moving forward is far more legitimate and pressing, as Ryan's couching it. Because I think you're right. Like, I have a really hard time looking at this map and saying DeAndre Levy is going to be the same player anywhere close to what he was in 2014.
And I mean, he's gonna be 30 in a month, and he's dealt with two very serious injuries, and, you know, you don't want to be that injury prone guy throwing that label around prematurely, but I just don't know how you can rely on him being healthy, you know, regardless of whether he's playing at his level. We don't know if he'll be able to make it out back on the field. We know he worked his ass off to get there this year, and by the end of the year, he was full snaps, so he lasted, you know, 4 or 5 games down the stretch, basically as a full starting role. But, you know, the off season is long, the training is long, and then the season is long. that's a long time for that 30-year-old body that's had some issues in the past 2 years to hold up. That's why I think you just get a talented linebacker, you throw him out there, and if he takes Levy's position, then find a new position for Levy.
But as to what Ryan was asking, do you see him being full-time? Like, I mean, I think he'll be full-time in 2017, but after that, like, who knows? Like, what do you
think? Who knows, right? I think something that I kind of want to keep coming back to, and I can't help but coming back to, is the fact that this offseason, he won't be rehabbing. He won't have an injury that he's trying to come back from. So he can spend much more time on getting prepared for the season rather than just, you know, catching up to everybody. So I think that's crucial. I think that's very important for a guy who, like we've said, has a history with dealing with injuries, has missed effectively almost over a year and a half due to injuries. And I think he'll really turn it around. And I want to turn this to Alex because, I mean, because the Lions really just use two linebackers for the most part because their base set is nickels. So
about 75% of the time, yeah.
Sure. So do you see Levy in 2017 getting full-time reps as one of those two linebackers?
I think absolutely, because he's not really much of a strong side linebacker. I don't think he would be the guy that comes off the field for 3 out of 4 snaps playing strong side, but I think he's more... I mean, we don't even know how fast he is anymore. Like, he's kind of... seems like he's gotten a little slow, too. So, is he fast enough to play Will? I don't know. Like, Will or Mike is the only two positions I see him playing full-time.
All right, so those are obviously the two big names. So, here, Whitehead, DeAndre Levy. Now, let's start going down the list here of everyone else. So, I'm just going to start... I mean, obviously, there's some guys really deep on this list, like Steve Longa... is Brandon Chubb still with the team, or did he get released? I forget.
I believe they added him.
They added him to a futures deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't want to talk too much about those guys, because obviously, I don't... Did Steve Longa even see a snap this year?
No.
Okay, no.
He didn't. Nope.
So let's talk about the other guys who were important, but still very much so bit players or rotational. Obviously, we spent most of the year talking about whether or not John Bostic would return. He didn't. So, I don't know what factor he's going to play moving forward.
I don't think any of us really know what kind of factor John Bostic will play going forward.
I mean,
forward.
We didn't see him play for us yet, so it's really hard to tell.
Yeah. All right. He's unrestricted free agent, so, you know, there's a good chance he's not even going to be on the team. He's an interesting case because he was, I believe, a third-round pick from the Bears. They traded him pretty quickly. Then they trade him to the Patriots. Everyone, you know, thinks John Bostic's going to have a resurgence of his career like Kyle Van Noy. But they end up trading him to the Lions for a 7th-round pick. The conditional 7th-round pick, so most likely nothing. And now he misses the entire year. So,
non-factor.
I mean, yeah, I just don't know. No one really knows what to expect out of him, but I wouldn't expect him to be any part of the plan.
Well... what do you think then of Josh Bynes, who definitely was kind of part of the plan in many ways, given how injury riddled the linebacker unit was?
I personally like Josh Bynes a lot. I think he would be perfect as a backup and a very reliable backup. It's just really sad that we've had to have him as a starter, but he's filled in pretty good for what we've had. And I think it was maybe last year or 2 years ago, he was the highest rated linebacker on the team from Pro Football Focus.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because he was also the highest rated linebacker for the Lions on Pro Football Focus again this year, because DeAndre Levy didn't have enough qualifying snaps. So,
yeah,
exactly. He's very reliable. I like him.
We're all in agreement, I think, here. And Jeremy, you can get to it too. But Josh Bynes is the quintessential, you know, break glass case in case of emergency guy. You know, Josh Bynes came in when the Lions needed him the most and definitely gave them replacement level play. And, you know, we mentioned that 75% of the Lions' base set and defense is nickel, so Josh Bynes won't see a ton of the field, but I definitely would not be opposed to him coming back. I think he's a great depth body, and I think that he is more than capable coming in, serving in a pinch role for the Lions at linebacker.
He is, I believe, an unrestricted free agent this year
as well.
Yes,
yes.
So,
Yeah,
I mean, and you just consider the position that he was put into. Like, suffers that preseason injury, gets put on IR, gets cut, so he's without a team for 7-8 weeks. Lions bring him back up right in the last half of the season with, you know, he hasn't been practicing with the team, he hasn't been sitting in meetings, and he plays pretty well, you know, all things considered, for the last 7-8 games. That's exactly the kind of guy you want. And now he has, you know, familiarity with everything. I think he's a no-brainer re-sign this offseason.
And okay. I don't think it's going to take a whole lot to get him back either, because when the Lions did cut him, he didn't generate a whole lot of interest. And whether or not there wasn't a whole lot of interest for him, or Bynes just really liked the situation he would have been in with Detroit, so he decided, hey, I will be the guy that you can circumvent these kind of rules with putting guys on IR and, you know, designating them to come back. So
it's important like to know.
Relationship.
It's important to note that during that time, there was, I think, a 3 or 4 week period where any team but the Lions could sign him, because the Lions had placed him on IR and no one did. And like you said, we don't know if that's because Bynes wanted, you know, Bynes had like a behind the scenes agreement with the Lions, or if Bynes just didn't draw the interest. But either way,
even with
behind the scenes agreement, like if someone came along with a better offer, like that could have, so
he could be like our linebacker version of Andre Flewellen.
Yeah, I like that.
Two more names here, the young names. Let's start with Thurston Armbrister.
Let's not.
Okay. Let's never use the word start and Thurston Armbrister together.
Okay, putting the kibosh on that. That leaves us with, there's Brandon Copeland. He's technically on the line now.
I don't know. He plays everywhere because the Lions needed help at linebacker. They needed help at defensive end. It was just, you know, hey, where is there an injury this week? Okay, let's put Brandon Copeland there.
Yeah, pretty much. He's a restricted free agent, so
yeah, it didn't take long for him to play linebacker after all the injuries that we suffered.
Yeah. And last name here, of course, the rookie Antoine Williams, who did have an injury kind of middle of the season, and who was asked to play out of position quite a bit to start filling in for some of those early injuries that were starting to set in on the team. Does anyone expect him to be significant to this team, though, in a few years?
I don't really see him becoming more than something of a special teams type player, and I think that was kind of his MO coming out of college, because those are the guys that clearly draw a lot of interest from Quinn, and they're, you know, if they're not going to get starter snaps, or they're not going to be used, you know, I keep coming back to saying the word situationally, and I'll eventually break myself of it, but if they can't do either of those things, then they better be special teams players. So I think that's where maybe Antoine Williams could find a role. But it was definitely interesting to see him get the starting nod, and I know it was, you know, it was kind of by necessity, but it was that fourth week against the Bears, he got his most snaps.
Yeah.
Of the season, he stepped in, and I think he had, I want to say it was something like 38 snaps.
Something around
He lays down some pretty hard hits too, which is nice to see. Mm-hmm. But I think he could definitely contribute on special teams. Maybe his ceiling could be like a Josh Bynes. That would be great. Just be like a reliable linebacker like that. But I mean, he was a sixth round pick, so
fifth round. I want to say.
Either way, yeah. I don't really expect him to be that great, but just maybe another body to add some depth, which we definitely need.
Yeah.
Be the next Zach Follett, but with a longer career.
Yes. And shorter hair.
I think that's a good place to leave this, shall we? Should we put a kibosh on this flaming car wreck?
Zach Follett is where we should leave this conversation.
Yes.
I think that's perfect for where the Lions linebackers ended up in 2016.
All right. Let's take a quick break and we come back. This was the segment where we crashed the podcast last time, the mailbag, and we're going to try to not crash it this time. We'll be right back. Mail time. As always, back here, hashtag AskPOD. Before we begin, as always, we read the reviews. Jeremy, what is our new review for the week?
Yes, we only have one this week, but it is from the well-renowned Poop Guy 69.
Nice.
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 He gave us 4 stars, which is fine. I'm not mad about it.
It's nice.
Title of his review is solid. His entire review in the body is Boo Wrestling, Yay Lions.
Red beer!
All right, on to the mailbag. Where do we want to start? You know what? Before we start, we should give a little background. We didn't really get to talk earlier in the show. We were all out in Grand Rapids last Friday.
That's right.
Which is going to be close to about a week when this thing actually comes out because of our technical difficulties. We didn't even get to talk about in the first segment about how we took that town by storm.
You took that town by storm, Chris.
Me? Me?
You did. You fucking took that shit.
You took it by storm like it was a Founder's sandwich.
Like that Devil Dancer sandwich. God.
I'm sure it had a great time dancing right out of you, too.
Yes, it did.
If it even has. We met a couple of wonderful members of our community. Beast F-Ball.
Yeah, we did. Yep.
Great guy.
Great guy. Great hang. Good hang. Guy came out to get a beer with us, and he had to be up super early in the morning, so much respect to Beast F-Ball. And the other gentleman that we had the pleasure of meeting, I'm going to let Chris introduce because I like hearing him say his Twitter handle.
And he has a question for us.
Wonderful.
So we're going to lead it off right there.
What a segue.
We also met like Mike Payton. We were also singing like Ready Limp Bizkit in the car on the way over. And
also a great guy.
also, let's say
a lot of hatred about our playlists.
Let's mention the Grand Rapids serenaded us with our favorite song.
They did. They played the Grand Rapids Griffins played Africa.
That was not by coincidence. It could not have been by coincidence. They knew we were in the house, and you know.
When have you ever heard Africa played at an arena? Right? Never.
I don't.
We had to have been the loudest people in the entire arena.
God! So yeah, at that moment when it broke out, if you were sitting anywhere near one of the, which side was it? It was like behind one of the goals. It was like And all of a sudden, you might have heard about like 6-8 drunk people just suddenly screaming the refrain to Africa. That's us.
Glorious.
You're welcome. Glorious, yes. But the other guy who met us, who now kicks off our mailbag, is Evan, who was fantastic, at Big Slick McDick.
There it is.
Is that what you wanted to hear, Ryan?
It's what I always want to hear in the mailbag.
And he has a Grand Rapids related question. Out of the three of you, who would I most likely be able to beat in a fight? P.S. I'm really bad at fighting. So technically there's 4 of us in here now. He was originally sending this to us when Alex wasn't in here, but we're going to include Alex in here anyway.
Okay. I've won a few fights in my lifetime.
It's me. He would kick my ass.
I wasn't going to say it.
I am more than comfortable in admitting my inefficacy in fighting when I do not have a pocket knife.
Yeah, okay. I think a pocket knife definitely changes things. It no longer is a fight anymore, really.
It's a knife fight.
It becomes a knife fight. So I think just kind of like the tail of the tape, Reno would have the reach on anybody. just because he's a rather tall guy and he's got some reach, he's got some lanky arms to him. Nice wingspan, great motor. Doesn't stop. Especially if it's a pop star song.
Never stop.
And then Jeremy, you just don't want to beat up on like your dad, right? Like you wouldn't want to beat up on a guy with glasses who's in his
30s. I got a bad back, you know. You don't want to catch this cane.
Big Daddy.
And then Ryan plays hockey, so he's probably like the most fighterish out of all of us.
Scrappy. Really hardworking guy, blue collar.
I bring a lunch pail to work every day.
Yep.
Have you guys ever gotten into a legit fight?
Yes. Alex just admitted that he did.
Well, I was asking everybody.
I've gotten to quite a few, but my record all time is not great. I think I'm batting around a 200
on the independent
That's
circuit.
A lot of fights for you, Chris.
Yeah, I know. I had a troubled childhood.
But you lose 100% of the fights you don't take.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Wayner.
Which is me. I've never been in a fight.
Yeah. Next question.
Yeah, you didn't
here.
Take the Buffalo Wild Wings fight, so you lost that one.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. Next question here from Morris Richard. And this is something, again, we're kind of dating ourselves on because the whole damn thing crashed on us, but most incompetent former player in a front office role. Matt Millen, Isaiah Thomas, or Vlade Divac? Now, this is coming to us because when we were recording, it was like the day after Boogie Cousins got traded out of Sacramento in the NBA for basically peanuts, for Buddy Hield and peanuts.
I think we need to turn this one over to Ryan.
Ryan's been heated about this all weekend, about the Cousins trade. I want the floor is yours, Ryan.
I'm still pretty upset about it because the Sacramento Kings, it just kept on getting worse and worse as more things came out, so I'm kind of glad that we're recording this a little bit later in the week.
Dude,
but Vlade Divac... Go ahead.
I was just saying, they could have had Andre Drummond. The Pistons are trying to shop Andre Drummond for Cousins.
Oh, they could have had any number of better deals, and even Vlade Divac, the GM himself, admitted that oh well, two days before the Boogie trade, we had a better deal on the offer, but we just passed on it. Well, then recreate the market. You don't have to trade the guy on the Monday before the deadline. I don't understand the logic of, hey, this is the best player we've ever had in our franchise's history. Let's unload him for a guy who's going to be a rotational shooting guard, a guy who used to play on our team, who was Rookie of the Year, and he's had two knee surgeries since then, and a couple of draft picks, one of which is protected. So say the Pelicans absolutely this. Say the Pelicans experiment does not work.
It's not going to happen, though. That part's not going to happen.
Sure,
just saying.
But just what I'm saying is that the fact that the Pelicans were able to bully them, you know, bully Sacramento and say, okay, we still want a top three protection on this pick. Because even if they do end up in the lottery, say they miss the playoffs, I think that is still kind of like a viable thing. I mean, the Nuggets aren't going to roll over. But what if that lottery pick, all of a sudden, they jump into the top three? Now Sacramento doesn't get it, and they have even more egg on their face, and they look like even bigger idiots, which I don't think is quite possible.
And their other pick, they've already traded to the 76ers, too?
So the 76ers have the right to swap picks with them because they wanted to get out from underneath Nick Stauskas' contract.
Which they had the Nick Stauskas contract, yes.
They had Nick Stauskas, who is... They had Nick Stauskas. No. This is going to be a endorsement for Nick Stauskas. They had a player who was just as good at this point of his career as Buddy Hield. So they got rid of Nick Stauskas. They traded the option to swap their picks to get Buddy Hield in a roundabout way. And I understand that you want to get into like sunken cost theory and all that stuff. Get away from me, nerds. Listen, Vlade Divac is probably the worst GM. I mean, you can make a case for some... If anybody wants to make the case for Matt Millen, go ahead, because you can.
Yeah, but did you hear from the Kings? They said that Buddy Hield could be the next Steph Curry.
Well, he shoots like Steph, and he has a body like Clay, so he's an amalgamation of the best backcourt in maybe NBA history. It's incredible that they got him for Boogie Cousins, actually.
I want to make the case for Isaiah Thomas. Because the Knicks under Isaiah Thomas was probably like, the Knicks are a long running highlight reel of just inefficiency and just clown show. But when it was under Isaiah Thomas, beautiful as he was playing as a Piston, like, it was a shit show. It was an absolute shit show. Not just the sexual harassment, which was bad enough as is, but like everything else Isaiah Thomas did with the Knicks was just awful.
And from the Chauncey Billups trade on, Joe Dumars would be up there. Because he was pretty bad.
Not Vlade Divac.
No, I'm just saying, like, that one time period for him, it was terrible.
Sure, but we're working with some rarefied air here.
I'm going to go Matt Millen, by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, how many games did the Dumars Pistons and the Knicks win, Isaiah Thomas Knicks? Was it more than zero?
I mean, these are long seasons. But
I don't care. They won a game.
What is the comparable of 0-16 in the NBA?
I think what's comparable is that you have a player who averaged 20-10. There has never been.
Oh my God.
There has never been a center in the NBA who has averaged the numbers that DeMarcus Cousins has and has never even made the playoffs.
He is a legit superstar. He could have taken a team to the playoffs. Anyone.
Like, this is the thing, is that centers like Boogie Cousins, it's not whether or not they make the playoffs, it's how many, like, deep runs and championships they win.
The Pelicans are right now really scary.
Here's my
take on Boogie. Meh.
All right, next
question.
So
glad Alex is back to say Boogie.
Yeah. Hold on. Really...
Real quick, Hakeem Olajuwon once ate more than 100 chicken nuggets, and this is... All right.
Hakeem's the greatest. Hakeem's the greatest.
Hakeem is the greatest. Well, no. The reason I was looking into that, because I thought that there was some story, thinking back to the Isaiah Thomas Knicks, when he signed Eddie Curry, who literally became the most disgusting abomination at center ever, that he... I think that he once gave a ball boy $50 to go get him chicken nuggets, and when he came back with chains, Eddie Curry was very upset that he came back with change and that he didn't use all the money on chicken nuggets. I think this is part of Knicks lore, but I couldn't track down the story, but I found out that Olajuwon ate 100 chicken nuggets.
I've got some Knicks friends. I'll ask them. Smog's Gold Coin asks, and it's not a wrestling question, Jeremy. I propose a challenge. Without looking it up, can you name 5, or at the very least, your top 3 long snappers in the league? I think it would make for an interesting list cast.
Here's the thing. We tried to answer this question last time we tried to record this podcast, and I said I could not name anybody but Jimmy Landis and Don Muehlbeck.
This is about the point where it crashed, too. Yeah. So the podcast did not want us to talk about long snappers.
Since then, there was a long snapper signed by someone in this league, and I threw it in our Slack room, and I've already forgotten his name.
I do know one other than Jimmy Landis and Don Muehlbeck, and it's because they added tape breakdown on draft breakdown, and you could see every snap from Joe Cardona, who is now a New England Patriot. So there you go.
That's my
probably
man.
Probably one of the best ones in the league, too.
They drafted him.
Yeah. So he's got to be good.
Right. I think that's why Bob Quinn came over and drafted one, but I have my list of top 5 long snappers.
Oh, God.
Fuck.
Don Muehlbeck, because he snaps hot fire.
All right, we can roll with that. Sure. Next question I have here is from GB42. There's been a lot of speculation regarding Amir Abdullah, his newfound quote-unquote injury-prone status, and his ability to be a starter in the league. Do you believe Abdullah can become a running back who can carry the ball 300-plus times a season, or do you think he's the Robin to someone else's Batman?
I don't think we'll ever find out the answer to that question, because I don't think we need him to carry it that many times a year. I think we should kind of copy, or not copy, but just... take what the Atlanta Falcons have done with Freeman and Coleman and kind of give that 1-2 punch, which we might already have with Abdullah and Riddick.
Yeah. And I mean, you do have Stafford. Like, there's a reason the Lions for so long haven't been really running the ball that much. And it's not even because, I mean, on one hand, the running back situation's either been injury prone or it's been a flaming mess. But I mean, Stafford can throw the ball that much. And you can rely on your offense around that.
And the other thing that's changed, too, is the NFL and the way that running backs are utilized. Because last season, in 2016, there was only one running back who ran the ball more than 300 times, and that was Ezekiel Elliott.
Who has that line to run behind, too, that Cowboys line. And that'll open that shit up for you.
Mm-hmm.
But do any of you give credence to the injury thing? I mean, he did have pretty serious shoulder surgery going into 2016, and then his foot injury was pretty bad last year.
Too early to tell. Way too early to tell. Ryan's making hand-jerking motions right now.
It's not a visual medium, but wank wank, because he didn't miss any time in college. He didn't miss any time his rookie season. Yeah, he had the shoulder injury, but he played through it. So, clearly the guy is tough. So I think that has something to do with, like, somebody being labeled as injury prone, because sure, when you have injuries, whether or not you play through them, I think that's a skill too. Like, toughness is a skill. So that first season when he played through shoulder injuries, that was commendable. The second season, a foot injury, like, that's literally what you support yourself on. Like, I don't know. It seems like that's more of like a freak accident more than anything, and it seems like he's right back on track.
The foot injury was also non-contact, so that's by definition kind of like a freak injury too.
Yeah, and I think Ryan agrees with me here. I'm actually very excited for Abdul next year. I think he's extremely motivated after missing the time for the first time in his career, missing 14 games and a playoff game. He was chomping at the bit. I get the feeling he thought he was healthy enough to play towards the end of the season, and he really wanted to get out there. But, you know, you see all these videos of him working his ass off in the offseason. You see him really, really eager to get back out there, and I think he's going to be playing with a chip on his shoulder in 2017, and I'm really excited to see what he does.
And here's the other thing about that, too, is even though during that exit interview, it was either right after the... It wasn't after the Seattle game. I think it was when the players were cleaning out their lockers. There was a question that somebody asked Abdul about, do you think you would have been able to play towards the end of the season? And you could tell that he thought, yeah, I could have played at the end of the season. But I think it speaks volumes that the organization said, no, we don't want to rush you back, because clearly they have kind of, given him this, full-time running back position. I think that he's their guy. So,
plus, it's not like we were playing for anything last year. I mean,
yeah,
playoff win, man.
That's a joke.
Next question here. I don't know if I can say this.
What?
Nappyhead Ed.
That's his Twitter handle.
Do you think moving Lakin Tomlinson to the right side will make an improvement in his play?
I hope.
Yes, I think. I mean, it's more natural to him. It's where he played in college. The NFL has kind of changed. So, like, I don't know if it's still traditionally a less athletic position than the left side as guard. But, I mean, like, yeah, he played that in college and it's more natural to him. So it should. But who really knows?
Yeah, I think I've pretty much accepted the fact in my brain that that's who the line starting right guard is going to be. I mean, I know it's insanely early to say something like that, but I don't see anything happening with Larry Warford at this point. There hasn't been any sort of rumblings or rumors. There haven't been any rumors about anyone really, and I don't think there will be with this front office. But
we had a couple more questions about that, but I think, like, which one do you keep, Reef or Warford? I think it's going to be angling for Reef more than Warford, if anything else. Yeah,
that's so. What I'm feeling too, so yeah. Let's hope Lakin, either he's more comfortable on the right side, or maybe he sees his career kind of jump in the third year like it did with Travis Swanson last year. But either way, I'm starting to come to terms with Tomlinson being the starting right guard, so let's hope something turns around there.
All right. Baltimore Beatdown, one of our sister blogs, asks us, is Joe Flacco elite?
Yes.
Oh.
Nope.
No, I'm just kidding. He's not.
Is he a top 10 quarterback?
He's got more playoff wins than Matthew Stafford.
Boy. Top 10 playoff QB.
He was 25th in Pro Football Focus grades. He had a 71.4 grade. He barely outplayed Blake Bortles.
That defense was on fire, and they could not do shit last year.
You know why? They lost their quarterback guru to a little team called the Detroit Lions.
Oh.
So I'm looking here. Matt Barkley had a higher DYAR on Football Outsiders than Joe Flacco did.
He was slinging that ball, man. Matt Barkley?
-126 DYAR for Joe Flacco, -13.9 DVOA, slotted somewhere between Carson Wentz and Colin Kaepernick.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So I have a question for you guys.
Shoot.
So we did have NBA All-Star Weekend last week, And, you know, we talked about the Boogie Cousins stuff, but I had one thing that fascinates me is alternative theories about science and shit.
Oh, no.
And Kyrie Irving came out and said very clearly that he believes the Earth is flat.
Draymond Green, too, kind of sounded like he also believed that. And well, a few other guys.
On a general principle, I want to see, you know, I want to see proof, always, just before I believe in anything. And I just wanted to dovetail this into, are there any, like, crazy conspiracy theories or alternative things that you're not quite sure about that either you guys believe? Or do you think, like, maybe there's a Lions player out there you could see believing in something like, I don't know, the Earth is flat, or there's an Illuminati, or the Bilderberg group, or whatever?
Yeah, I still think we should investigate 311.
The bands?
Everything.
I'm leaving it with that.
I think mermaids are real.
Interesting.
Who was it on the Rams that thought that? Mermaids are real and dinosaurs weren't, or something.
I don't get how you can think that the Earth is flat. Like, I can't wrap my mind around how somebody can believe that. Like, how do you explain the sun? Like,
that is like my favorite thing on Facebook is looking. Like, I have a bunch of friends from Weird Twitter who go and look at, like, all these flat Earth groups, and you see the way the guys bend themselves over to try to say that the Earth is flat. And
oh boy!
But it's. I don't know. Once again, one of my favorite guys, Sam Chris, writes a lot about this and about all that kind of weird stuff. So there's always, and about the culture around that. I don't know about you guys, but I firmly, firmly, unironically believe in lizard people.
So the Rams player who believed in mermaids was William Hayes. He had a deeply, firmly rooted belief that mermaids exist. I mean, really, the only thing that was flat about Kyrie Irving was his jump shot during the three-point contest when he lost to Eric Gordon, so... I don't think I believe in anything like that. I don't believe that Matthew Stafford killed John F. Kennedy. Or that he was responsible for it.
Didn't you say something about the moon landing, Ryan?
Oh, I did. We did talk about this before, didn't we? So there is something I kind of do believe in.
Okay, get in here.
Yeah, I'm not too sure if we landed on the moon when we did.
You think the first one... Like, you think we landed on the moon, but you just don't think, like, the first Apollo to touch down was...
No, I think the original lunar moon landings may have been filmed by Stanley Kubrick on the set of 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Okay. Again, sure. I want to see receipts. I want to see receipts on this, yeah.
One of the more believable ones to
That's the thing, though, is like, and that's why I think I find it fascinating, is because we kind of recoil against, like, I'm not saying the Earth's flat, but it's like, there is an intrinsic human quality. It's like, I want to see proof, just like you want to see proof that we actually landed on the moon for Apollo 11.
Right. I mean, I'm not sure that Stanley Kubrick's The Shining is actually the Stephen King novel. I think it might be his attempt at making a movie about the Holocaust. Or about the relations between the native people of the Americas and the people who came over to colonize this place. It could be about Native American genocide. Go watch
any
The Shining.
Questions?
What is happening?
I want to talk more about the lizard people.
No,
I know you do. We can talk about lizard people if we dovetail this into something about Spider-Man.
You just try to drag my favorite conspiracy theory. That's all I'm going to say about conspiracy theories because they're stupid. Is that Katy Perry is JonBenet Ramsey?
Oh, that's a really good one. That's a really good one.
Hold up, is your favorite, or would you actually?
My favorite. Like, I don't believe in any.
Gave you any kind of like inkling of proof. Would you say, yeah, I might be a believer? Come on, you got to have at least a little bit of wonder. You can't just take everything that people just tell you to be true.
I'm Spock. I'm all about logic.
I want some logic to make sure the Queen of England doesn't have scales.
Oh my God.
It's off the rails.
I actually have no more questions. I was trying to figure out how to do a John Cena here. So how do you want, do you want to talk about Philly, or just want to work in something on conspiracies to be out on a John Cena? Or you just want to say, that's the end of the show. We don't need to do John Cena anymore.
No, no, no. Let's end on something in the draft, I guess.
Okay. Okay.
Zay Jones, Kareem Hunt, draft him. See you guys.
Can I continue?
That should be it. Just Alex saying those names and then we're done.
Okay, yeah. You know what? We're done. That's it. That's the end of the podcast, everyone. We're just trying to figure out how to end it. And Alex just wanted to jump in there before I start recording. So that's the end of the podcast. Have a great week, everyone. We'll be seeing you back here pretty quickly because it is going to be a fast turnaround. And hopefully we'll have this out for you Thursday.
Investigate 311. Chill.